but you would spend a lot of money to do so. So you've got, your addressing wise, you've got a, what I'm going to call a scan-out engine for the purposes of this talk. Render refers to it as a CRTC, which is technically wrong for a couple reasons, but also doesn't sound as good. Your scan-out engine can only ever go so big. A single link of DVI, which is the standard digital connector right now, has a limit of how fast, literally how many pixels per second it can push out. And if you do the math, at 60 frames a second and 165 megahertz, the biggest picture you could put out there is about 1920 by 1200, which is why every single LCD maxes out at 1920 by 12. You can't fit more on the wire. But that scan-out engine has to go walk through memory and pick pixels out of memory and try to get them into DVI signaling format and get them out into the world. So as it's addressing through memory, it's generating these memory cycles, it says, well, there's clearly no reason for me to ever need to address more than 2 kilopixels wide, because I can only feed a single link of DVI, and that's never going to get wider than 1920. So, okay, I'll only put 11 address lines in. And so the block of memory that the scan-out engine is pointed at can only get 2 kilopixels wide. If you try to do something wider than that, it just looks like garbage. Similar arguments apply for the hardware-accelerated rendering. The 2D engine and the 3D engine inside the chip have coordinate limits for exactly the same reason. There's no reason to make them much more capable than you can scan out, because you couldn't see that image anyway. So why would you bother drawing it? The great thing is that all of these are essentially arbitrary. Often they're the same depending on the different subsystems of the chip, and sometimes they're not. The 2D engine might have a different limit than the 3D engine. Either of those could be different than the scan-out engine. The 2D and 3D engine can have different output, can have different coordinate address limits depending on whether it's on the input side or the output side. You might be able to source from a 4 kilopixel wide texture, but only get to only draw to something that's 2 kilopixels wide. Tiled versus linear depends on the layout of the pixels in the frame buffer. Just show of hands, who knows what I mean when I say tiled? Okay, for the ones that don't, think of a normal frame buffer as just row of pixels over and over and over, and as you walk off the right edge, you restart at the left edge. Tiling is a trick to make them more spatially, to make spatially local what's temporally local. So imagine a checkerboard, and you go 8 pixels across, you restart at the ninth pixel is then one down from the one you started at, you fill in this checkerboard, and then you move one checkerboard to the left. This is actually really useful when you've got a pixel cache in the way, because now things that are local on your screen, like icons, are local in memory. Depending on whether your frame buffer is in tiled or linear format, you might have different coordinate limits for what you can do. The Radeon R500 can scan out up to 8 kilopixels wide if it's linear, but up to 3,968 pixels if it's tiled. Not 4K. I don't know why. I have a suspicion, but I don't know why. And sometimes they're just weird. The early Matrox cards had a coordinate limit on only the digital output route, where it could only go up to 1280 by 1024. Because it was cheap. So the problem this then causes is you have one root window pix map. That's where all your pixels have to go, which means that it can't ever get bigger than what you want to do with it. And if what you want to do with it is scan it out to the hardware, make it show up through these projectors, it's limited to what the output engine can do. And if you've only got one of them, and your scan-out engine can only stride up to 2 kilopixels wide, then the whole thing has to be 2 kilopixels wide. And that means that if you wanted a second monitor to the left of it, it's got to fit in that same 2 kilo. That's not the greatest thing in the world. That monitor right there is 1400 by 1050. These are running at 1024 by 768. I couldn't possibly fit them next to each other, because 1400 plus 1000 is bigger than 2048, which is all that hardware can do. So multi-head doesn't actually work. You have these arbitrary limits that come in and break these assumptions. You want to be able to just plug it in and have it go. But we can't, because you only have one root window pixmap. We also, as a side effect of lots of horrible history, we size that pixmap once at server startup, because you don't want to waste memory. If you have a unified memory architecture like the Intel chips, then any memory that you allocate to the frame buffer, you can no longer use for system memory, so you'd like to minimize this. I'm assuming that this is getting fixed by other people. Thank you. And we clamp, so this big allocation that we have for the root window pixmap, we clamp more or less arbitrarily to try to fit into all these constraints, and hopefully it works. Occasionally it's broken anyway, or it gives you really weird behavior when you do. The Radeon I mentioned earlier is a good example of this. If you try to set up two 30-inch monitors next to each other, that ends up being 5 kilopixels wide, but accelerated rendering stops at 4 kilopixels. Right. And so what happens is you can do accelerated rendering to all your off-screen pixmaps, because they're all small enough. But then when you try to copy from them into the front buffer, the accelerator can't do it. So we fall back to the CPU, and then we end up doing lots of bus reads, pulling pixels out, doing nothing to them, and putting them right back up. It's incredibly slow. And it's sitting on my desk at work. So we would like this to be better. So Shatter is this idea that I've been working on for a while and that doesn't work, but is pretty close, where you can have multiple root window pixmaps or any other pixmap. Ideally, I mean, imagine you have a big 8 kilopixel off-screen surface that you want to render to, and then you're going to bilinear downscale it down to make it look shiny and then put it on the screen. You can size them whenever you like based on, you know, assuming you've got a memory manager that actually lets this work. You can clamp them according to what the hardware constraints that you're working within are, but in principle, you're never going to notice. All of this just magically works for you and it looks fast. So the idea here is the root window no longer has real storage. And as rendering comes in from clients, you get down to the bottom layer where you're just about to do rendering, and you say, wait a second, that's not a real pixmap, it's a virtual pixmap. I'm going to go look up this list of real pixmaps that are backing it, send the same rendering back down to each one of them, and do the appropriate translation and clipping to make sure that that works. And then from the user's perspective, you'll just never know the difference, because you'll see both of them. And as an advantage, your laptop will work. Hooray. So X has approximately 4 rendering APIs at this point in time. We'll refer to them as Core X, which is the things that the Core protocol defined back almost before I was born. Render, which is a 2D anti-aliased alpha-enabled composition API. XV, which lets you do video, and OpenGL, which lets you do 3D. Core X is awful, but you have to keep it working because you did promise to be an X server. So those requests have to work. There are some ugly geometry primitives that you can use in Core X. You can do solid fills. You can do arcs that are aliased around the edges with really big steps and it looks nasty. You can draw lines, you can draw polygons with winding rules, you can draw alias text. All of these are really straightforward to Shatter, because all you have to do as the request comes in is take a copy of all the arguments and translate them relative to the logical screen coordinates and clip and draw. So sweet, this should be straightforward, right? If the bad parts are this easy, then the good parts of X should be just as easy, right? It'll be fine. You need to take a little care when you're doing the geometry primitives, just because of the way the X server is written. When you get a polyline request passed in, the renderer assumes that it has the right to modify those bits, to say, you know, here's where the line starts and here's where the line ends. And we do, in fact, do this. So you have to copy it aside before you hand it down to each one of these backing pixmaps. But it's memcopy. We know how to do that. Copying is where it starts to get hard. Imagine you've got 4 screens like this, and you're going from, you've got a window over top of them that's your blue rectangle, and you want to copy it into the green rectangle. But that that's where all your bits are. So you have to be very careful about doing this and walking these in the correct order to make sure that you don't clobber some of the bits that you're going to try to copy out later. If I started copying from here, you know, find all the bits in this pix map and try to copy them out, then I would copy down to the right, and this little strip would end up here, but now the pixels that were there are gone. So I've lost data, so I can't do it. So you have to be careful to start walking these in the reverse order. You find out which one's the more axis major direction, walk it in that order first, and then the other order second, which means you have to write, essentially, a four arguments greater than or equals, which is pretty straightforward, but you can do it. The root printer, it doesn't, but you would really like to. The question was, does the protocol guarantee that the root window is lossless, that pixels that you put there stay there? And the answer is no. It is a completely legal move to take all rendering that happens to the root window and throw it away. That's fine. But we know what the problem is with generating expose events. They are incredibly slow. I mean, it's the same reason that when you VT switch back onto your X server, you get a quick paint of some stuff, and then pop, 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 things come back in. And that's because you keep having to context switch back in and out, say, think of the region that you want to expose, send the exposure event, have the application think for a minute, remember what it put there, and send it back. You'd really like to avoid that. It's bad enough as it is. So yeah, we could just blow the bits away.
You could do the easy bits, I was thinking, with that state with the model bits
map. Right.
The one that overlaps.
Right. I think I've got this right now. There are cases actually where the Xenorama code will do that, which does something similar. This is all operating within one screen, which you can think of as one GPU. And the Xenorama code is wretched, so every once in a while it gets this wrong and generates exposes. But okay, so you can, this you think you can do, but because you've got two arguments involved, you have to, and they both point to real pixels, you have to be careful about how you walk them. The image primitives in X are not used that often. I'm using getImage for an example, but putImage has the same problem. I apologize for putting code into the presentation, especially function pointer type defs with camel casing X, really. So getImage takes as its argument a drawable, the box that you want to grab, the format, which you don't care about, the plane mask, which is -1, and the destination, which is some bits, which is the bits that you want to send back to the client. The client has asked now for a screenshot. It's trying to get the image off the screen, and you have to get the bits back to it. Well, so now I've got this window spanning two shards. Shards are the notional term I've been using for the backing pix maps. It's a lot quicker to say. Shatter, you're breaking it into lots of pieces. Shards, the pieces. So as you walk over this pix map and you say, okay, I need to grab this piece from this shard and the right piece from the right shard. Well, if you send the getImage request to the left screen as is, you're going to run off the right of the edge of the pix map, miss, and then keep filling in the rest of the bits, and those will all just go into dest, into the byte buffer, the output buffer, more or less correctly. When you get here, though, you're going to translate this against the left screen. It has no way of knowing what the stride is, right? You're going to grab this bit of pixels and this bit of pixels and this bit of pixels off the left, and they're just going to go packed in right after each other. So you can't, the parameter just doesn't have enough arguments to describe this stride, to say, stop here, skip the next however many pixels, and restart, and put the output bits there. So you can do it, but you have to change all the colors of getImage and putImage to do this. It's workable. The other thing you could do is you could generate a lot of getImage or putImage requests to each backend screen and say, all right, well, I know I got this big request up front, but I'm only going to put this span, and then the one below it, and then the one below it, and then the one below it, and just walk down. When you say reassemble.
Well, take them, you have to recopy it, basically. You have to take the two buffers you got from the lower layer and recopy them into the, like, four passing.
for get image. Yeah, you could. Yeah.
Are there formats like that? Because then you don't even have full bytes.
Right.
Yeah, typically we don't ever have the case where one screen of a GPU will be planar and one will be packed, or where one will be RGB and the other will be BGR.
Okay.
I have a lot of bizarre hardware. I don't know of any where we do that. You could. It would be foolish. And there's no reason to do that. I think it's easier to just add a stride argument and step it, because you have to anyway. There's already a stride argument implicit in how this works, because the right edge of pixel storage is always ragged for alignment reasons, so there's already a stride that you have to accept. So I think it just makes sense to just add another argument. Right. So the point there was, if the root image that you're trying to get is bigger than your BLIT engine can handle, you still have to do manual walking. Yes, but remember that we've tried to create these shards such that they're only big enough that the 2D engine can handle them. But yeah, you could have fallen back to software like we usually do for get image. So, not that big a deal. And then there's all the other details. Tiles are this awful thing in Core X protocol that lets you say, yeah, I said I wanted to do a solid fill, but rather than solid filling with, you know, just a color, I want to do this little tile pixmap. If you remember on old Macs or Windows 3.1, the background editor that lets you light up individual pixels, that, and make this little tile pattern that then checkerboards across the background. Yeah, tiles exist. In principle, the tile can also be really, really huge, bigger than your engine, than your acceleration engine can do. So you can specify tile offset, but if it's bigger than your acceleration engine can stride, then it doesn't matter. Then you have to chunk it up into lots of little pieces. So yeah, you'd have to handle tiles this way too. Stipples are a similar concept. Bitmap in X means a pixmap with one bit per pixel. It's literally just one, it's a monochrome image. And stipples are, you can think of them as a mask on the rendering that you're doing. You want to say, where this pixel is one, rendering happens. Where it's zero, nothing happens. Again, the stipple could be way too big. Okay, I'm going to pretend that that never happens for the moment, but if it did, you'd have to handle it. We also have these things internal to the X server called get, set, and fill spans that are not protocol rendering requests. They're not something that the client can directly ask for, but we do have a way of decomposing anything that the client could ask for into these requests. On old hardware, it used to be very easy to get a very small aperture, you know, 64K of VGA aperture space or something like this, or 16 bytes at a time of not really memory mapped video memory. And so it was easy to just, you know, do one span at a time and let everything else handle decomposing that into span at a time. They don't happen that much anymore, but they can. And so you have to also handle the spans target. They're not that hard to chunk up into multiple requests, because it's just a horizontal span at a time. You've already accepted it's going to be slow, but you have to handle them. Push pixels is this other rendering request inside the X server that you can't really get to from the client. It's basically like having a second stipple, where you have one stipple that represents the cursor image and one that represents the outline of the cursor. And this is literally what it's used for, is for software monochrome cursors. In principle, now you have two stipples that could be really, really large, but you know what? Don't have a software cursor that large. I don't care.
But if you, any of those cases, you just fall back to software rendering?
Yeah, we more or less do anyway. Generally, when these happen right now, they just fall back to software as it is. But we'd like everything to go fast. So if you can make it so that that you avoid these paths, or that they work correctly if you happen to accelerate them, lovely. But most of these don't actually matter. You can bring up GNOME without this, so that's nice. Render is probably my least favorite rendering API ever. I've stolen one of Carl's slides from ages ago and rotated the color so that it shows up, but this is basically what Render lets you do. Render lets you take a source image, happens to be a solid color here, and you end that with a mask, which is now this full alpha channel, 8 bits of alpha that lets you specify transparency. So everywhere you're inside the mask, you kind of cookie cutter that out and then paint it onto the destination according to some blend mode that's all the possible ways that you can use alpha factors to combine pixels from the source and the destination. Great! Ternary operations. Three things that you have to walk, and that could all be split up into multiple shards, so if you cross shard boundaries, you need to make sure you hit all of them. Okay, we can do that. It's pretty straightforward, except for the cases I'm going to talk about in a second, where, you know, as long as they're all untransformed and straight and just kind of going straight through, then it's all easy. There are some geometry primitives that come along with Render that lets you, basically makes it easy ways to build masks. So you can do trapezoid and triangle rendering and build up this mask that contains the outline of the thing that you want to draw and then blend that with your image and, you know, cookie cutter that with your image and blend it through. Those are pretty straightforward to chunk up into bits the same way you did with the Corex rendering primitives. There's also a glyph cache that lets you upload a single shared copy of a font with all the glyphs pre-rasterized at a given size and share that among multiple programs so that you don't have one instance of it for every process, every GNOME terminal process, every Firefox process. This is okay as well because the glyph cache ends up usually being sufficiently small, it's only the one pixmap. But when you do glyph operations, when you pull from that glyph cache and use them as the masks that you use to draw fonts, then you have to be prepared for the destination maybe shattered, maybe broken up. So you have to walk over that too. Oh wait, all the other things that are wrong with Render. Yeah, it's a centering operation. It has six operands. There's this feature in Render that lets you specify the alpha channel of a picture independently from the color channels. So I don't think they're even required to be the same size. Which I don't know what that would mean, but you could have now these six masks that you have to walk in, six pictures that you have to walk in parallel, making sure that they're all chunked up correctly. I actually had to look up what the word was for take six arguments, because I wanted to use it. The source and the mask operands in the last slide are allowed to be transformed, and this is where it gets really nasty. When I say transformed, I mean you can think of it as deforming it. You're rotating it, or you're doing a perspective skew on it, or something like this. So now it's not just a simple matter of figuring out where that fits on the screen. It's not just, you know, I'm pasting this image straight down. It's, oh, this pixel, you know, I'm going to draw this pixel here, but it's of a warped image. It's, you know, Shadow Man's been twisted a bit, and he's got this pixel corresponds to, on the output, corresponds to this pixel on the input. You have to invert the transformation and make sure that you walk each of the source pictures according to their clip in the pre-transformed space. Oh, and you have to do that for both the source and mask, and the source's external alpha and the mask's external alpha. Right, so filters is now where this gets really awesome, because once you transform them, you can specify how you're going to get the samples. You've transformed this picture.
Are those transforms all one-to-one arithmetic, or are there any cases where...
They are required to be affine, which is fortunate.
Yeah.
But now, once your filters are transformed, once you're transformed and you have filters, if your filter is nearest neighbor, then you just pick the coordinate in the back in the mask that happens to match most exactly to the inverse of the transformation. If your filter is bilinear, which is, you know, what you get when you do resizing in Firefox, then it has to sample between the four nearest neighbors and pick proportionately what they're all going to be. What do you think happens when you reach the edge of a shard? Now you have this strip that you have to go walk over very carefully and compute. Basically, you have to truncate everything to just within the width of to within the current the convolution kernel width of the filter, and do that, do it over that exactly. I did make it so that the copy area walk code that I meant that I was talking about earlier, I did make it so that that would work correctly if multiple shards overlapped, like occupy the same pixels. This is why it ends up being a quaternary operation, because you have to look at all the boxes and pick the outside edge of whichever direction you're going. So yeah, you could. I'm not really sure how to do that. It's difficult to say how that would work in the case where one of the shards is the buffer that you're scanning out, because then you'd have this sort of off-screen tickle that you don't see, but that is in the same picture. I don't know. It would require a little bit of hand-waving. You could probably do it, though. Oh, and then there's dithers, which fortunately the protocol specifies, but nothing implements, because otherwise they'd be really hard for exactly the same reasons. You'd have to rotate the dither mask to figure out where you are in the dither according to where you are in the real output, not where you are in the shard that's got those virtualized pixels. So, a lot of boring typing. You can do it, but you really hate yourself afterwards. XV in some sense is a lot nicer. You already have these arbitrary, you already have some coordinate constraints brought in by XV, because your overlay hardware actually says, no, I can't take anything bigger than 2 kilopixels wide. People tend to get angry about that, though. And if you want to have, you know, 4 monitors in a square and have one video image going to all of them because you're building a display wall or something, then you have to come up with this software version or just use the YUV texture support rather than the YUV overlay support in the chip to do really big images that way. So the model is sort of weird for XV, so I wrote down all the words. Screens have adapters. Adapters are the overlay, the video overlay, or the texture engine in the texture bit of the 3D engine, which lets you do YUV textures. Adapters have ports, which is essentially the number of times you can connect to it. Your hardware overlay only has one. Texture adapters typically have as many as you want, because it's just up to the device to software manage that. And they have formats, which is what kind of video data you're sending it. Is it RGB? Is it YUV? If it's YUV, which of the 40 types of YUV is it? Is it CMYK? Is it NISC or other? So I think that the trick here, and I haven't actually gotten around to doing most of this yet, is just expose a new adapter type that virtualizes the whole thing and says, if you do this, I promise I'll do the best I can. And then if everything fits on one screen and the image that you're trying to put is within the coordinate limits, it'll use the overlay and you'll get really pretty upscaling and everything else that goes along with that. Yeah. You know how that is. You know where the image is going. The question is, do it automatically? Applications really can't get it wrong in this sense, because we're the ones in control of the clip list. Their MPlayer is not going to say, I'm at +100, +100, and I'm 100 pixels wide, and therefore I want all of my pixels at +1,000. It's going to put the picture inside its window. It's going to put the YUV image inside its window, so you know when you're entirely on one CRTC. Sure, we might know when you can get this right and just have applications not have to care. And then if it gets too big for the overlay or it crosses CRTC boundaries, then you split it up and use the texture engine. Yeah, okay, you can do it. It's essentially no more complicated than the put image case I described earlier. There's also a get image path for this. Did you know that X can be used as a video capture API? Please don't. We do actually have a driver to do it. There's the V4L driver will let you do this kind of capture. Yeah, you can fix that too.
You can actually use that on VoIP applications. You can actually set your X to be the source instead of a camera if you use the V4L interface.
Can you not have said that? People also get very upset about video when it tears, when it doesn't sync to retrace properly. There's a scan out happening here. There's an electron beam sweeping across and lighting up an LCD inside of there. And you can, if you paint something here, right as the beam goes by, you'll see the bottom get painted and then see the top get painted as the next beam traces through. People get really angry about this in video way more than they do for their desktop, way more than they do for 3D games. So now you have to handle syncing to retrace for all the emulated video surfaces that you're constructed, but you can do it. It's just a lot of boring typing. So then you get to direct rendering. Direct rendering is this idea where you give the X application permission to talk directly to the graphics card, and you work out some handshaking for, I'm going to own this area, or I'm going to own these objects full of pixels, and then please make them, you know, let's not step on each other. So now, as windows float around, you have to update where they are, and you have to communicate this to the client somehow, and now you're telling them this additional bit of information, which is that the root window isn't just one thing, it's lots of things. But this actually ends up not being too bad, because OpenGL is a little bit more pleasant in this regard. Basically, all you're doing is building up a display list full of commands that you're going to send to the 3D hardware, and you just hold on to it, and you do it anyway. And then as you get to a synchronization point in OpenGL, which is an explicit flush or swap buffers, or you know where you're swapping the image you've rendered to the front and making it actually appear on the screen, that's sort of the implicit point where you actually dispatch the rendering to the card, and then it goes and does stuff. So at that point in time, you just do it twice and change your clip and your viewport to match for each of the two blocks that you've got, each of the shards that you're rendering against. Right. Right, so the observation was that in DRI-2, this does get a lot easier because the list of information that you're sharing with the clients is different than it was in DRI-1. So you don't have to tell it, you don't have to tell it where your window really is. You're just handing off the buffer after it's rendered. Correct. Correct. And when you drew to the back buffer, it would have to be done multiple times, and then you would do multiple swaps to the front.
So you still do need to have the shard going to the front. It's part of the DRI to
always direct to the back buffer. You do have to tell the client about the list of shards it's rendering to, but you're going to get that in some sense from the DRM device, because the DRM is the thing that knows that's where you've got these bits. Again, sync to retrace is hard. Again, there's this direct pixel API that deals with the front buffer directly that you have to do explicitly by manually walking each of the ones, and then, yeah, you knew about that. It's the same thing as put image and get image before. You can also just punt, because GL lets you say, no, sorry, I can't do that. It can say, nope, sorry, my textures are only going to be this big. I can only draw to a surface that's this big, and you get to suffer. If that's not as big as you wanted, then too bad. Sorry? So the question is, how do the apps cope when this happens? What does it do when it runs off past these limits? They'll make a window that's too big, and then they'll only get their rendering into the top left corner of it if they don't check.
Most people want two separate windows, and that would be two shards with no overlap, and just make it so that there's empty space in between them, so you can never have the situation where if you move a window,
yeah,
there's this empty area where it's between two windows.
The empty space isn't the problem.
No, but so that you never have something that actually crosses between more than...
Oh, yeah, we have that mode already. That's Zaphod mode. And no, people don't want that. People get... I mean...
I could get dual display to work on my laptop, and I wanted that, and I couldn't get it to work just because of the Windows.
Yeah.
Maybe that was just a year ago.
Yeah. There are use cases for both. And when you're using Zaphod mode, you do get this kind of for free, although it splits it apart at a different layer of dispatch. But it doesn't let you do multi-head for display walls correctly because you want big things moving around. Lots of people want extended desktop and ask us why it doesn't work, why they tried to set up multi-head and got the wrong thing where windows are stuck to one piece of glass. So, yeah, you want it, but thank you, 10 minutes. You can want it both ways, but that means your users are going to want it both ways. So you kind of have to implement it. So this slide is entirely a lie. Most of the complexity of this, the CoreX stuff is mostly written. Render is a lot of typing. One of the reasons that the complexity that I'm facing right now is you want this at two layers. You would like it to be both at the CRTC layer for scanout to say, no, it can only go, you know, you can only draw to this big, and you want, those can only get that big, and you want it at the EXA layer, for which is the hardware acceleration path, so that if you create an off-screen pix map that's that big, you can render to it, and render to it with the hardware rather than with the CPU. You would like to be able to do that without having to write this boilerplate code in every subsystem that checks whether it's that kind of shattered pix map and does the magic chicanery to restart rendering. You'd like it to just be the kind of thing where, as you're about to start rendering at all, this unified shatter subsystem says, nope, that's a shattered pix map, I'm going to go look up what the shards are now. And then all the DXA or render would have to do is give you the list and say, this pix map is virtual, it's got these shards backing it. Kind of awkward, just the way the API works out. But once I've got that, I should be a little bit happier. Also, it's a complete API break. It really, really, really messes with the screen rec, which is the one structure in X that we haven't messed with too much since X386 4.0. So it's going to break all your proprietary drivers. I am really sorry. Well, yeah, they're going to complain. I'll just have to tell them about the joys of freedom. So it's a work in progress. I would certainly appreciate anybody who thought this was interesting and wanted to take a hack at it, because you can get the code. Really. It exists, I promise. And I'm going to be continuing to work on it for probably the next at least the next 6 months, probably going to try to get into XServer 1.7, and life will be wonderful. So I have 15 minutes left. 5 of my actual talk time, and then 10 for questions, but I'm done. So, do you guys have questions? Yes? That is an excellent question. The question is, I've been talking in the sense of one GPU. How does this work with multiple GPUs? I would like to use this again to do that. So, all your windows become virtualized immediately. And as rendering comes into the top, you figure out, oh, it's on video card number 1, I'm going to send rendering there. And it's not on video card number 2, so I'm just going to clip away rendering, it's not going to happen there. And then as things move back and forth, it's going to be slow like it is already. But I would like to reuse this for the same thing that Zinarama currently does. Zinarama is the way we do this right now, and it does it way up at the top of dispatch, first thing as a request comes into the server, and hands it off across multiple GPUs. And therefore, all the back-end GPUs still have all the problems. They still have the coordinate limits that have to work with them. So I would like to reuse this multiple this redispatch layer every time I get the opportunity.
Well, you get it for free pretty much, because there is no reason why shards could be on different video cards. They're effectively different rendering backends.
Right.
So you basically get all of that for free once you get it working.
There's almost for free.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you are. No, no. The observation there, the observations there were that you get this almost for free because you've already done the hard work of breaking up rendering, but then you're limited to the lowest common denominator, or else of what the different bits of hardware can do, or else you get really weird effects. No, that's not true. When we do Xenorama, we essentially ask each of the backends what they're capable of, each GPU, and only expose the common subset. So nothing goes wrong. Also in the sense that the different backends, you know, one of them could be really nicely accelerated driver, and one of them could be VESA, which has to do everything in software. So everything has to work in software anyway. So when the driver fails and says, nope, sorry, my 3D engine can't do that, you're just going to fall back to software. So there's no problems at the edges, I hope. Daniel. I don't know. Did I mean 1.7? I don't know. When is 1.7 scheduled, Daniel? I don't know. I might be able to get it done by then. I'm a lot happier with it now than I was when I was working on this 4 months ago. So, James? Sorry?
So old macOS used to pretty much do that.
The question was, what do Windows and macOS do? No, they make me cry in a corner. Windows has a significantly different driver model. They basically just give the driver, here's a pile of pixels, and go and do this very limited thing against it. They don't expose all the complexity of GDI. They don't expose a lot of things. You basically get a buffer that you're doing some stuff with and a clip list, and that's it. So I suspect that they don't do this, though, because most of the complexity for this would actually be handled in the ICD, in the driver that's installed from the vendor. And most of them are probably going to be like, oh, yeah, well, if you want to do four NVIDIA cards in one machine, they got to all be NVIDIA cards, and they all have to work together. And they probably have to be within the same family generation and. Mac OS, I think, has a little bit better grasp of reality, but I haven't looked too closely at what OS X does. Ben tells me Mac OS Classic used to do something similar. You're holding up your hand saying 5 minutes left, not asking a question. Okay. Are there any people who do have questions?
I don't know much about graphics at all, but it made me wonder if in the future the people who make video cards kind of gave you a real frame in the middle, but a large frame that you could just render to.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase the question. It was sort of, you've got, the proposal that you're talking about is you have a region that's actually shown, and a bunch of area off that,
yeah,
that isn't shown.
So it
just
discards what
can't be shown.
So basically, your question is, what if your hardware is capable of a normal coordinate system, which means we basically don't need to be.
Then yes, we wouldn't need to do this.
And is that something, you know, why wouldn't the hardware vendors who now know that multiple GPUs is common, why wouldn't they just start doing it?
One, because multiple GPUs isn't that common. It's been broken in X since 1.5, at least. And I've had 10 people complain. Nobody does it. The people who do it are using NVIDIA's driver, and NVIDIA's driver has it working, but... Not simultaneously. There's a way to make them switch, but no, there's no laptops that do both at once. That's a USB device. I'm going to pretend those don't exist. Yeah, and makes you log out. Did you know that? Yeah, if I wanted to switch between graphics chips then, and I wanted to log out between, man, that's easy. No, this is keeping it working when they're both up.
I heard that there was some hardware manufacturer that was thinking about future generations. Would we have an option to run both in parallel?
It's possible, and the thing is, when you do that, all the GPUs that you're talking to are still going to have some physical limitation on what they can accelerate. The question that you asked earlier about what if you had this big logical rendering area and you could just clip away bits that didn't matter to that, yeah, we've got that. That's not the problem. The problem is that the thing you're trying to render is bigger than the box it gives you. The box it gives you is implicitly clipped to 2 kilopixels because that's all your scanout hardware could do on my terrible old ThinkPad. So you can set the clip list, you can set the clip for rendering to be only going to fit in 2 kilopixels, and then anything else that goes to that chip is just going to get thrown away. Fine, yeah, you can do that. But you want more out of the chip. You're asking for more out of the chip because you want that plus this other external display, and you can't fit both of them in the same box. It's the box that it gives you isn't big enough. So yes, good idea, but it's already there, and it's still broken. I hope I explained that well. Are there any other questions? Then I have to thank you all for coming out, because this was lovely. And I can't believe you listened.
Have a thing. Thank you very much, Adam.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
So that was good. So if you'd like to ask, take a look at the screen.